Cord. Okay. Welcome everyone to the December 16th, 2020 Aries Working Group B call. We're glad that you're here. This call is being recorded and I'll post it into the wiki page at the bottom after it becomes available and it gets processed. Please remember the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. I have the link to the agenda page is in the chat, and I'll add it again real quick for those that joined after I did so. Feel free to add yourself to the attendees list or make any other useful adjustments as necessary. Is anyone new to our group that has not introduced themselves and would like to? All right, well, I'm glad that everyone is here. Don't have any particular announcements, but I do have a question about calendar. The next two Wednesdays are the 23rd of December and the 30th, and that nestles right into holidays. And I was curious if the general feeling is we should still have the meeting, or if enough people are going to be out that we should not. Any opinions?
Cancel.
Yeah,
that's two votes for canceling. Three votes for canceling. Is anyone going to argue against canceling? All right. So for the 23rd and the 30th, we will not be having a meeting, which places our next meeting after today at the 6th of January in 2021. That'd be a great way to start out the year.
People should plan on checking Rocket Chat at this time. How about that?
We'll all make a cursory appearance in the Rocket Chat. Yeah. So I'd encourage you, given the gap of meetings, please do kind of check in, see what's going on, respond, ask questions, engage in conversation, all the useful stuff that we do. But then we'll not plan on having the meetings on the 23rd and the 30th of December. And the January 6th will be our next one. And I'll try to make a note on the wiki to that effect. Awesome. Okay. That point of business out of the way. Related meetings. I will offer the DIFCOM working group. We are talking about what types of support DIDCOM could offer and the carrying cost of doing so to support DID methods that don't allow resolving an endpoint with a DID. So if you have a DID, you can't resolve an endpoint from it either for legal reasons or technical reasons, what DIDCOM can do to support that, or what the costs are to do so, and if it's worth carrying. So that's a conversation we've started and we'll continue to talk about it. There's an issue open on that repository. To gather comments in the meantime. So that's it for the DIDCOM call. Other calls that folks would like to report on?
Indie contributors, we will probably hold it this coming Tuesday to try to keep moving on CI/CD for Indie Node. That is a huge deal, getting bigger by the day. We are having a interim meeting tomorrow on that, and then the Indie contributors call. So we're going to continue to that. Indie DID method, we had a good meeting this week about transforming NIMS and NIM plus endpoint attributes to produce DID docs. So basically what we do today, but with a more modern transformation of that data into a DID doc. And on January 5th, we're going to meet again. We're canceling the next two, but we're going to meet again to talk about adding richer attrib data into that kind of transformation to produce a DID doc. So basically, for those who have been following along, we're changing the strategy that Kyle was originally proposing, which was to just say the attrib is the DID doc, to going much more towards the transformation and assembling a DID doc based on NIM plus attrib. And Paul Bastian will be leading us through that discussion of how we'll get richer attribs into that DID doc. So that's what we're talking about.
This week is the on week for the Identity Implementers Working Group call. And so for those who don't know on this call, what we do is we summarize the various activities from several other working groups, just to make sure that you can get the information in case you don't have time to attend everything. So that's what we'll do for discussion. There's been a question come up about where the next version of Libindie SDK is going and what that might look like, whether that's shared libraries and evolution of Libindie, other libraries as well. And so I'd enjoy having a discussion about that. So for those who are interested in that topic, I look forward to seeing you tomorrow morning.
Awesome. Good news on that. Let's hit work releases pretty quick. The Aries Protocol Test Suite, I don't see Keith. And we're talking about the test harness, or at least a demo of. Stephen, anything else to report there?
Mute. That doesn't work. I'll talk about it then. Thanks.
Okay, perfect. Any news about Aries Cloud Agent Python?
Python, yes. Tons of work going on right now. So lots of things happening. Out of band did exchange support has been merged. It's going through testing and tweaking right now. A couple of people are looking at it and uncovered little things. So, and our next thing is on that is to get it working with Aries Framework Go as soon as we can. Adjustments for supporting Aries Askar have been made, mostly internal. The multi-tenant support has big chunks of it have been put in, and so that's getting quite close. Mediator support likewise in DCO, Adam and Daniel Bloom have put a ton of stuff in the last few days to get mediator support into Akapai, so that's being done. And then we continue the work on persistent queues. And lastly, I can now almost certainly say, you know, it's very, very likely to happen that BCGov will be posting a bounty related to W3C verifiable credential support with ZKP and selective disclosure with revocation. So we want to get that work done. We want to accelerate it. So there's likely to be a what's called a code with us released possibly today to announce, a request for participation in that.
Hey, Stephen, on that particular topic, are you trying to do this with BBS plus signatures or something different?
No, BBS plus signatures, absolutely.
Yeah. The reason I ask is there's already a PR against Indie SDK that would cause ZKPs to conform to W3C standard when formatted as a verifiable presentation. That PR has been sitting there since August and it needs to be finished. And your general description actually fits it quite nicely, but it doesn't use BBS plus signatures. It just transforms the format of a proof so that it matches verifiable credential spec correctly. But it sounds like it's pretty separate from what you're trying to do.
I think so. I suspect it is. We're certainly going down the path of BBS Plus with this work. I will take a look at that. I did not realize that was there.
Awesome. Cool. Aries Framework Go, anyone from the team here today? Oh, there's Troy.
Yeah, just a quick update. It's mostly been cleanup efforts this past week, at least from the SecureKey team. There is work to port the efforts that we did for presentation exchange from our JavaScript implementation into the Go implementation right into the framework. So that work, you'll see some PRs coming through.
Cool. Cool.
And that is all.
Hey, Sam.
Yep.
I had a bit more that I missed talking about because we didn't talk about Aries Shared. And
oh,
so
I did skip it. Shame on me. Aries Shared.
Aries. A couple of things there. We have a fully working Akapai branch. Most of the Aries agent test harness works. The multi-tenant support now works with the new Aries Shared components. Askar has moved from an Andrew to a BCGov repo, and I will probably be requesting permission to contribute it to Hyperledger probably this week. So that was my selfish request, that people on this look at Rocket Chat every once in a while, because I want to get some discussions going there on shared RS, on Aries Askar, and then that notice about the VBS Plus, the W3C verifiable credential support bounty. So all really good news there. Pleased how well the Aries shared components are working with Akapai. Basically, it's just a command line parameter now to run with an Aries Askar wallet, and it just works so far. So we'll keep. There was a bit with revocation still to be done. I'm not quite sure where that is. That wouldn't be Askar. That would be in the shared RS. But other than that, all of the other Aries test harness tests passed.
That is fantastic news. Really excited about that.
Yeah.
So very cool. Awesome. Okay. Looking at my attendees list here, the toolbox is getting some associated updates to match the mediator stuff that Stephen mentioned. And so that's coming along. Any other work projects that we want to update on? All right. Appreciate everyone's work. So we have two main things on the list today. We have a testing demo by BCGov on the Aries Agent Test Harness, and then discussion of AIP Next, also led by Mr. Curran. Are there any adjustments needed to that before we get going? Topics that we ought to be covering that aren't on the list? All right, Stephen, I will stop sharing and pass it over to you.
All right, let me share my screen. So Aries Agent Test Harness, I think most people on the call, I recognize most names. So it is allowing interoperability testing. Basically, for any agent under test, you create a container that contains the thing you want to test with a web server that receives requests from the test harness to say do stuff with your agent, and you implement that as the back channel that controls it. These are instructions that you can use to get a instance of it running where you've got an Akapai agent running for three of the four agents that run when a test runs, and the fourth is Bob, who is a .NET agent. So if you follow this, you can have that running. What I wanted to show today was we added, so we're now doing daily test runs of the code in the main branch of the different repos. And so what this shows is the report that you get out of it. And we just wanted to let the world know that on allure.vonx.io, you can see access to the reports and see the trends that are happening. We just sort of spun this up. So this is 4 days worth of tests recently. But the good part is, as I said, with all of those things that are going in, like out of band and did exchange and under the cover changes for Aries Askar, things continue to work, which we're pretty happy with. So basically, as I say, we basically use GitHub Actions to trigger the report and then fire the report results over to this service that we're running. that is using an open source project called Allure to present the Behave results. Behave being the BDD test harness that operates. So I think we've shown this before, I'm not sure, but basically you get a bunch of information about what tests are run, which tests are successful, what happens in those tests. This is present proof function for testing 37. So you've got a series of steps that run and show what happens when that test runs. As I say, we have the service is kind of interesting because there's no actual authentication on it. So we're running this service, and if you just go to allure.vonx.io, you can delete all the test cases and delete all the test results. So we prefer you didn't do that. So I'm giving you the links that are less powerful. And we're hoping Allure has an outstanding issue to put authentication on it to allow us to control, there's a public and a private way to do this. But anyway, I just wanted to show you this so that you can drill down. This is the .NET example when .NET is running with ACAPI, and we've got one test that is not succeeding. So we can show, I just wanted to drill into that and demonstrate that. So basically these are the test steps that you go through. And then we can drill into seeing exactly what failed in this. So we get a failure. We're expecting the text to be 200 and we're not getting that. And now you can drill down and see sort of what's going on in the test. So this is the test case, the behavior test case. And then this is the step that's failing. And so that's just as I say, a way that people can take a look at what's going on with the test cases and see what's failing. The .NET ones are less successful these days. And there seems to be some sort of issue in it. And I can't remember what it is. The other guys, the folks have looked at it. So only 60% of the tests are passing, and a bunch of the revocation ones are not passing by default. And so a credential gets revoked, and even that right off fails. So we're getting a failure within the .NET framework for reasons we're not sure of, and probably not going to be able to take a look at or beyond what we've done. But I just wanted to share that out, that as we add more back channels to this, we'll include this, and we'll be putting links in so people can see the trends, can see the dashboard of what's working and what's not working. And encourage folks to add their own to it. This is the overall Allure test service. And with that, you can get all of the results and you can delete projects and you can send your own results in. We'd prefer you didn't do that. So be good community members and don't delete things, but you can if you want. And that's, I think, all I wanted to show on this.
Oh. We have hands up from George first and then James Ebert.
Okay.
Hey, Sam. Sorry, Stephen. Sorry. So I actually had two questions, but now I forgot one. But my first question is with the harness the way it is, are agents expected to or run through the whole battery of tests, or can they select individual tests?
You can totally select individual tests. And in fact, what we're running are just the tests we expect to pass. So there's actually more tests. So for like the .NET, there's a bunch that the one that's failing actually is a something that's changed since we assembled the list, and we sort of manually adjust the list. I've been pushing us that we change it so that we actually fail when we get a different expected result, so we can run all the tests, and if a bunch of them fail what we expect them to fail, that's okay. But the way it's working right now is you select the tests you want to run and run them.
Okay. So yeah, and my second question is just what's the relation between this and the AIP profile?
The set of tests in this, we aligned with the AIP 1.0. So we're trying to test all of the pieces of 1.0 in this. And we will have, and let me just see if I can show one thing. Yeah. See the tags here? These indicate where we use those to identify where the test case from. So this is AIP 1.0 test. So we could tag these. The idea would be to tag these with AIP 1.0. But that's how you both select which tests you want to run and how you group them into groups so that you can execute a group at once.
So that's a relation. You described the relation in one way from the test harness to AIP. Is there any relation in the reverse direction?
Test harness to the
AIP. I mean, from the AIP profile to the test, this test harness, is there any sort of guidance or requirements or anything like that?
We didn't put anything, when we did AIP 1.0, we didn't have we had two sort of brand new test suites. And so there was no guidance in AIP to say, oh, here's the test suite you have to run. We hope to have that with the two, but we haven't got to that part of the discussion and we don't have a set of tests for it. I'm not sure where we are with the tests. Like some of these tests will apply, but I'm not sure there's a complete set.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, thank you. I'll now pass the torch on to James.
My question is, I think, a little simpler. I believe you mentioned that these are running against master or versus tagged releases. Is there intent or desire to have, for instance, Akapai or .NET to Akapai at a tagged release versus
yes.
The...
Yeah, so there's mechanisms within it. They're not. We had a volunteer start to build that out, and then they didn't finish it. So right now there is an Akapai, I believe it's called, just an Akapai Docker file. The way we do it basically is agents under test. They just the script that runs these just looks for Docker files for different agents. And so there's one called Akapai and another called Akapai Master. The master one, we're actually able to control to whatever, it's a mechanism that allows us to pull any tag out. And so we can actually build any Akapai tag and .NET is the same. By default on these GitHub Actions one, it's pulling the source code from the, you know, basically the head of the branch, but we can absolutely run the other Docker file just pulls it from PyPy and using the latest release, for example. So answer is yes. Probably not completely there on how to do it. We need to just add some more fanciness to the bash script we use, basically.
Awesome. Also curious, is the harness intended to be utilized in a mobile context as well?
We've talked briefly with that. We're not and don't have anyone on the team of how you would do that. But the idea of it we think would work is that basically you could put anything, as long as you could put it into a container, it can run in this model. And be talked to in some way. So we're assuming that there are mechanisms in mobile development that allow you to put something in a container and run tests against it. And if that's the case, then we can, but we have not done it yet.
Cool. That answers my questions. Thank you.
And if you have questions in that, we'd love to talk to you.
For sure.
Awesome.
Any other questions for Steven and his demo? Awesome. That is very cool. It's nice to see reports and outputs and stuff like that, and the ongoing effects of that. So that's awesome.
Back to this. Is that next on the agenda?
That is next on the agenda.
I confess I did not do a whole lot. This is a wild week here in British Columbia. We have a hero leading our COVID response for the Ministry of Health. She does basically daily press conferences and so on, Dr. Bonnie. She's known Dr. Bonnie Henry, and Dr. Bonnie asked somebody the other day how people would prove they have a vaccine, have been given a vaccine. So suddenly we got pulled into a bunch of demos and things like that. So I did not get anything done on AIP. So I did a little bit of work this morning to facilitate the conversation, but I have not updated the document referenced here. So, and I just barely updated this. So we're sort of going from there. My apologies, but I think there's a bunch of conversation we can still have. We seem to have useful conversations whenever we talk about this. So I thought I'd just sort of quickly go through to the point on slide 7 where we begin to talk about things that we haven't decided upon. So that's kind of my plan for this. Does that sound all right?
Yes, cool. I think it's a good idea, and I appreciate your efforts.
Okay. We talked about this last time. We did the voting the first 2 weeks ago. We had discussions and agreed on a couple of changes to these, but other than that, so far the goals are more or less what we want, and we added this, which we never did vote on, but I think people generally agree with it. Is there any controversy on that one? Okay.
So maybe. I was looking at a different screen. We were talking about the mediation stuff or the ledger agnostic?
Ledger agnostic.
Okay. I don't have any comment there, but I do have a comment about the mediation support.
Okay.
And the confusion there. I have an idea that might be terrible. So if it's bad, we could just not do anything of the sort. The thought that I had was allow for an AIP profile sub-target. And what I mean is that there's going to be a handful of standardization that just doesn't universally apply to all agents. And mobile is a fairly decent use case for that. But it occurred to me that we could define a sub-target of the AIP that was around mediator coordination that could involve the relevant RSCs, et cetera, to make that happen. And if we did that, I think it might provide both the function of letting us sort of gather around a common thing and the function that the AIP provides, including like locking it to an actual commit, and won't confuse anybody who says, hey, I'm AIP compatible. They'd end up saying, I'm AIP 2.0 compatible plus AIP 2 mediation or whatever the sort of the sub target was. And I thought that that might be a mechanism we can use. But this is just an idea. I'm not at all convinced it's the right one.
I mean, I think, you know, you bring up a great point that a mobile agent, obviously, at this point anyway, does not do issuing. It certainly could be argued and probably should be argued that it should do verification. But having said that, you know, is there a subset that are mobile as an example, but mediator being another of them?
The mobile is interesting because you want, we've discussed the fact that if it just doesn't apply to you, then you can be compatible without doing that piece of it, right? So if you're using a protocol for issuing your credential, the mobile piece is really nice if they can actually receive the credential issued with that protocol, even though they're not doing the issuance, right? They're playing a different role there. And I think that that's perfectly appropriate. And I don't know that we need to perfectly speculate out sort of all of those angles. The issue here was that we have mediators that can support this and mediators that don't support this. And either is a valid option depending on your approach. And that's why including it or not including it is semi-controversial, I think.
I'm getting a little bit lost there in your words, Sam. When you say mediator can support this or may not support this or that, I'm kind of confused there. What are you referring to as an example?
Let me take another attempt at clarity there. To be a mediator, the requirement is that you support the forward protocol for routing. That's the requirement to be a mediator. There are, and that's necessary depending on what's happening entirely, right? There's a separate protocols for mediator coordination that may be used by projects that want to, but if a company is shipping both a mediator, for example, and a mobile agent, then they don't have to comprise or they don't have to abide the mediator coordination protocols in order to be an effective mediator.
So can you point us in the general direction of where it says or where the conditions for being a mediator are laid out?
You know, have we ever written that?
Yeah, exactly.
But my point is not to harp down on the mediator stuff, but to separate off the mediator coordination into something that's less controversial, but an optional target for those that want to, circle around that.
And also there's at least one more level down we could take this. We could take this down to the role level. I mean, even a mobile agent, you might not really expect it to act as a mediator, but should we expect it to be able to coordinate routes?
My answer to that is only if it falls into this sub-target or that. Now, it has to be able to do that, but I don't want to specify that it has to use this other protocol because it might use something internal and it remains a compatible product despite the fact that the mobile agent and the mediator is shipping as a bundle. It is compatible with the outside ecosystem, and that's the important part. That's the number one goal. The fact that you might have separate open source projects, that are either agents or, mobile apps that actually want to work together is a separate issue. And maybe we don't need to get this precise about it, is one of the reasons why this might be a bad idea for having a sub-target in the AIP, just because, we all kind of know that, but it depends on, I think that if we're going to try and articulate a little more clearly what's going on, then having some clarity there could be helpful.
But so maybe I'm, hi, this is Phil, maybe I'm a little confused also. In the original, in 302, the areas in our profile, I guess that's for version one, there's a list of agent types. And when you put your compatibility in that grid, although no one did, weren't you supposed to put in what agent type you were referring to be interrupt, and that would cover which of these you're addressing? So you could have an entry for multiple.
So I don't believe that's true, because you can be a mediator without supporting the mediator coordination protocol, and you can be a mediator that does. And so just saying that the type is a mediator isn't very helpful. You would have to go to a subtype to say, I'm a mediator that supports the mediator coordination protocol in that case. So I don't believe just specifying an agent type is actually going to solve this problem.
So then when we, as a group, just need to decide if we want to include mediator coordination as part of the definition of a mediator, I guess, which is kind of what George was asking earlier.
Yep. Well, and I'm violently against that.
Against that specifically.
Yes, because it causes a claim of compatibility problem for people who are doing very valid things that don't support that.
So you're saying like a mediator that has a custom API for establishing
If you're a company, or a code base or an organization, whatever, that is shipping both a mediator and a mobile agent, there is no reason, even in the sake of compatibility, that you need to support the mediator coordination protocol. It still remains compatible with the entire rest of the ecosystem in every other way. You've just chosen to coordinate mediation in a different way using different information that is not that protocol. And that is perfectly, perfectly valid from a sake of interoperability with all these other things. What you're saying is that my mediator and my mobile agent must be used as a bundle. And that is a very valid approach.
Yeah, but at that point, then you're not really being a mediator, right? Because no one else can use you as a mediator. You're just a mobile agent, and who cares who the routing is going through, right? From an external perspective.
No, so I think that's false. You're not
really a mediator at that point.
You are a mediator because when people send messages to you, they're going to involve that mediator on a mediation or on a routing path for a message that's going to that mobile agent, and it is performing a very compatible, interoperable mediation function.
Okay, that's true. I was thinking of from an external viewpoint, if someone, a vendor coming into this and saying, okay, I want to find a compatible mediator that I can use. Well, they're not going to look at the bundle you're talking about. They're going to look at people who can provide a mediator. So that's the angle I was looking at.
Yeah, that's the difference, right? You don't have to have an independently usable mediator to have a compatible interoperable mediator.
So I just rephrased that. Does that work? So we're not calling out a mediator at all. We're actually just talking about mediator coordination capabilities.
To be clear, we also need the mediator capabilities. So you'd have to make another bullet point at that.
Yeah. Yes. So the green stuff is not entirely accurate. Say, hey, with mediation, which I think is a goal we already have, and I believe it's already valid, right? It's already covered, but this is a goal we have. And then, yes. Yeah. And we can talk about the mechanism, but yeah, I'm happy with this. I think there's confusion already amongst us about the difference between being a mediator and supporting the mediator coordination protocol. And that's exactly where the line goes, whatever we decide to call it for clarity. Okay, I've talked too much. I'll be quiet.
I mean, this really is very close to what we talked about at the end of 1.0 as to how to express this. So we need to keep working on it, but I think we all essentially agree on it, which is how to express it in 302 is the challenge. Okay, any more on the goals to be discussed? Can I take the new off this and just leave that this is one of our goals?
Yeah, I think I vote yes.
Me too. Vote yes.
I like it. Okay. We've gone through this before. I don't think there's any changes. I don't think there's any controversy in any of these as far as what's changed in these. We talked through these as well. We don't think there's any issues. And potentially this, as we say, because if 334 changes it, but the idea is, I believe, we're going to is 334. So let's just talk about 334 and not talk about this yet. As of our discussion last week, we agreed to remove these four, the connection protocol, 36 and 37, and then, which are the V1 credential exchange, and then 056 service decorator. So those are all removed from the AIP 2.0, there, or at least will not be included in 2.0 and deprecate, we'll put notices on to deprecate the RFCs. Which brings us to this. I think we went through all of these. We have another place to discuss DidKey.
Yeah, I took away the action item from last week. I'm currently in the middle of basically typing something up, but I'll be opening that discussion in hopefully tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Excellent. I decided to put the start here button here because I added this question and I don't know whether we want to talk about it. But basically we have the indie ones inside it as well. So the attachments, people understand that. I hope that in with credential exchange, 453 and 454 define the issue credential and present proof flows, but they're predicate on there being attachments that are known. There's indie attachments that are used today in the existing protocol. So those would presumably continue to be supported in AIP for those that use indie credentials. So this is another place where we're gonna have to have a caveat. And then we also probably want to support the other ones that George and team have proposed in ARIES Framework Go. And again, caveat being saying, okay, these are the, I support 53 and 54, but here are the attachments I support. What do we think of that?
Let me say back what I think you said. You're saying that we will decide in the AIP which attachment formats we'll support as part of that AIP. And that way we have a common target, or are you suggesting that we all independently state which of the attachment types we support?
That is what I'm saying, because without that, 453 and 454 are essentially useless. Right, because you're not saying what attachments are there, or they're less helpful than they could be.
So my sense of this is that I'm not really too fond of prefixing JSON-LD with AFG, ARIES Framework Go, because the point being that what we really want is to move towards one of the goals that the new goal that we just added, which is basically ledger agnostic protocols and features and standards. Yeah. And for obvious reasons, we don't feel that the indie attachment format is helps us along towards that goal. So the goal, our goal at least, is more along the line, along the more standardized path for which we, in particular us, we've chosen JSON-LD due to the extensive support in the decentralized community for JSON-LD and LD signatures particularly.
But that doesn't get, so, and then the stretch goal is to add BBS plus JSON-LD.
Correct.
But
Which I just heard that the BC team will, what's the word? Well, you guys will open up a bounty for, right?
That's what we're planning on doing.
Yeah.
At least, sorry, I don't work for the BC government. So my understanding is the BC government will be having a bounty for that.
Oh, okay.
And just a little clarification point, of course, the ARIES Framework Go is doing this underneath the presentation exchange and credential manifest formats from DIF. So it's like almost a sub point.
And then there's a sub attachment, which is DIF PE attachments.
And credential manifest, yeah.
So I understand the presentation attachment one, but I don't understand the credential manifest's relevance.
I was going to say, I haven't looked at it yet.
So how is there a standard format that you guys know of to for an issuer to describe the, or for a holder maybe to describe the credentials that an issue that they want issued, or the other way around, that for an issuer to describe its offer or its catalog of credentials to a holder or a potential holder?
Well, so there's several kind of quasi standard ways to do it. You could use a JSON schema description of the schema. You could use a schema.org version of the credential schema. The one that I have heard the people working on the presentation exchange format using is presentation exchange. That is, I thought Daniel Buckner and other people were advocating that we use presentation exchange actually to describe credentials, which sounded crazy to me, but they were very adamant that that was a good idea. I haven't heard anybody saying anything about credential manifests lately. So I'm not challenging that it's a good idea. I'm just saying that doesn't match any of my any of the noise I'm hearing at all.
Actually, Daniel, I think I haven't looked at it a lot, but I think credential manifest is that crazy idea that you were referring to, which is that a credential manifest says, I'll give you this credential, but it includes the, oh, but you have to show me these things first. You have to prove these other things first, which is that piece of it.
Okay, well, if that's what it is, then that makes more sense.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, but I haven't spent a lot of time looking at it.
So the crazy idea makes more sense?
Well, no. We understand where the crazy idea is. Okay. I mean, I'm not totally against it. I just found it odd that issuing a credential would have an almost required flow through proving things. But
yeah, that's the part that seems really backwards to me. If you want to, if you want to ask somebody to prove something, you should use a proof workflow to do it. You shouldn't try to embed it right in the middle of issuance. You can do it at the same time as issuance, but proving is proving and issuing is issuing, and the two things should not be conflated.
On the other hand,
they should just, anyway.
I'll give you the counter argument to that, which is it does allow you to build things like we built a few years ago for at IAW that lets you say, oh, in order to get this, I have to get that, and I can build an entire tree to say, I want that credential and figure out all of the requirements for it.
To be clear, I'm not saying that it's not a good idea to ask for proof before you issue something. I'm saying that the way you do that is to use an ask for proof protocol, not to say, I'm going to co-opt the format for issuance such that proof is part of it.
I understand.
I fully agree there too.
Well, the way we rationalized it in RFC 0510 and 0511 is basically just reuse the existing negotiation dance built into the credential issue credential and present proof V2 protocols.
Yeah. So 510, and is there 510 and 511, and this is 510 is credential manifest?
I can confirm real quick.
Yeah, good. That'd be great.
Yeah, 511 is credential manifest.
Yeah.
And what about presentation exchange?
510.
That is 5. Okay. Wow, I even had it in the right order. Okay. And then this is already built into, I think it's, yeah, this is in 453 and 454, I think. But it might be a separate RFC. But anyway, I have to check. But it's referenced in RFCs. Obviously, these two are not in any RFCs, as far as I know, other than by inference in 510 and 511. Is that correct?
Well, our intent is to use them with the presentation exchange, for sure.
Okay, yeah. So we've got a bit of work to define how to represent this. Do we want to keep talking about that now or move that as work needed? I don't think we're going to finish today. So I sort of think we should take away as homework investigation of 510, 511, and then the two diff formats.
Well, so what are we investigating about RFC 510 and 511? Are we investigating the desirability of making them supported attachments?
Yes. Making in the AIP.
Well, if, for example, the Indy attachment thing is just viewed as an optional attachment format that we can choose or not choose to support, isn't that the same status we would be imputing to 510 and 511?
Yes.
Well, if it's optional, then what's there to debate about it? The only thing that would be debatable is whether or not to make it non-optional. Or I guess, are we trying to say we want lots of people to do it, even though it's still going to be optional? Is that the intention here?
What I want to get to is that we make sure, I agree with the optional part, but I think we want to be as precise as we can with these, so that if you support them, we're doing it in a consistent way. So any framework that supports it does it in a consistent way so that we've got interop. I think maybe that's the way, and maybe that's the thing we do is we define a bunch. Maybe we need a table below that is optional and that, you know, people can sign up to those. I'm not quite sure.
So one of the really useful things about AIPs, the way they're designed, is that it's not just a collection of stuff that we're heading towards, but it locks it because it locks the revision.
Exactly.
And I believe that's true. Even if we're linking to something in another repository, we can still do that, right? Which, and so that's a useful function, because what we don't want to do is have two people go after RFC 510 diff PE attachments and end up doing it slightly differently because they're looking at different revisions of the document and then still not be compatible.
That's what I'm worried about.
And so I think the prime function maybe that AIPs provide is a locked reference to the target. And even if the targets are optional, then that still performs the function of fixing the target.
I get it. Yeah. Well, I don't think it's very controversial that we should support presentation exchange at some point. Whether we put it in this AIP or not is debatable. But it's certainly a direction we want to go. I also am not opposed to doing the credential manifest stuff, but I am opposed to using the combination of credential manifest and presentation exchange the way that it's been discussed. I don't ever want that to appear in an AIP anywhere.
Well, that's essentially saying that you think RFC 511 is fundamentally flawed.
Well, I haven't read 511 in a long time. I did read it when it was created, and I didn't remember feeling that sensation when I read it. But the notion that a manifest should contain a presentation, I think, is fundamentally flawed. Yes. If that's what it says, then I'm going to argue that the community should not accept that RFC as an accepted status. I didn't argue against it as a proposed status, but I won't accept it.
Is it too much to ask for like an analysis or list of margin of reasons in a GitHub issue or somewhere for, you know, why?
Well, I already did say this on a GitHub issue somewhere already. I mean, the thing that I just articulated is not something that is new. I said it in a public conversation written down, either a PR or a GitHub issue. I'll go find it if you want.
I'd like to continue the discussion because I'd like to take a look at Credential Manifest and 511 and revisit. In Aries Framework Go, have you implemented Credential Manifest?
Not yet, but we're about to.
Okay. I mean, and that could lead to a lot of it of, you know, what you come up with would help this along this discussion.
Okay.
I mean, I see a lot of, I get totally, and my reaction was the same, and I said probably many of the same thing Daniel is saying, but I also see the benefit of these are the hurdles that I have to go across before I'm going to be given this credential. And then this idea of the potential of once I get that list of dependencies, going through a child protocol, not part of the issue credential protocol, but a child protocol that implements a request proof mechanism, and then continuing with the issuance after that is completed. That could be possible. So I'd like to not shut the door quite yet. So I would encourage us to take a look at it again and see if it's...
I think it's also worth pointing out, if we don't include attachment types that are supported, at least one in each, like if we just put Indian here, we'll come out with AIP 2.0 and you can't do any business between anyone written in Aries Framework Go unless you go ahead and do what we're doing right now, which is implement the Indian credentials.
Yeah.
So I think there has to be those in there that are in all the frameworks.
Yeah, I mean, my desire as of today would be to at least include these. At least include Indy and JSON LD signatures, and I think that would more or less require doing these two because I don't think, the problem that I saw in what's been done, for instance, in the SVIP is you've got LD signatures, but you have no way of exchanging them or requesting them and things like that, or you don't have very powerful ways. And I think that's what these give you. So I see these as kind of a package, and I would like to see us, agree on how we do them. So I definitely want to keep this discussion going, and I need to learn more myself. Okay. Can we leave it at that?
I guess we'll pick it up in January again? Everyone will go and do their homework.
Yeah. Yep. And all when you check your Rocket Chat message, you'll see where next week at this time, 7 days from now at this moment, and you'll see a Rocket Chat message saying, hey, remember to look at 511 and 510. It's your homework. All right. I don't know where we stood on these ones after the last message, and my apologies, I may not have kept well enough notes. Did we want to keep these three? Did we want to include these three?
Daniel mentioned in another chat in a different group that he had a proposal for a rich chat protocol that would make use of this. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's true, but I have no intention of that being part of this AIP. So the only reason I brought it up is because you asked if there were any cases for Please Act, and I was just saying, yeah, I'm planning to use it on something, but not for the AIP.
Yeah, correct. Steven or anyone else, do we really need this one for AIP 2.0?
So Please Act, the reason I'd like to see it is it allows a wallet to say, hey, did you accept my presentation? I gave you one. 454 doesn't have an explicit response, I don't think. Oh, I should check again, make sure. But there's places where we don't have an explicit response that could be useful. That's the only reason I was proposing that it be considered. It's a dead simple one to do. But you know, if one is going to use it, you really want the other to respond. So that's kind of why I thought it would be a good idea.
I think from my perspective, this is a incredibly valuable thing from a user experience on the mobile. So you present and then the user has no idea whether or not their presentation even succeeded or whether or not the verifier received it. So I think it helps provide a better user experience for mobile users.
So I agree. And particularly with what I think is the intention here, which is to use it when presenting a proof. So that is fine, fully agree. The only slight concern I have is that Stephen here is pointing to the RFC that defines the Please Act decorator, which is it being a decorator, it means its scope is broader than just a mere than just one protocol. And so I wonder why is it included explicitly, you know, why we are referencing its own protocol, Please Act protocol here or RFC here. And why aren't we just content with pointing to present proof V2, which already adopts the ACK mechanism? There it is, ACK presentation. If
I confess, I hadn't realized that we had added that to the V2.
Yeah. So was that so was your desire of adding a 0317 to this list of RFCs purely just so you can could have it in the present proof flow?
It absolutely was the driver, but I thought it could be useful in other places, which is why I wasn't as fussed that it was a decorator that might be used in other places. But now that I realize it's there, I have much less motivation to fight for it. I still think it's useful, but I'm less motivated to fight for it.
I'd prefer to, I would vote to remove this point, but still, you know, as we just discussed, agree on keeping present proof V2, which already adopts it.
Yep.
Others may speak up.
I'm okay with that.
I'm also okay with that.
That fills my requirements or ideals.
Anyone object? Bam.
I don't object. That's fine, but I want to just say about it that in the long run, I think we do need a general purpose ACK mechanism. So it's fine not to work on it right now, but sooner or later, I think we will want it to be something that any protocol can take advantage of. That should be a useful feature that everybody in the entire ecosystem understands is somebody's asking you to acknowledge a message. It's not protocol specific. So let's just delay it for an AIP or two and not do it on this one.
Well, the other thing is there's an interesting conversation on DIDCOM, which is do you put it at the DIDCOM level to say, did you get the message versus the protocol level to say, did the protocol complete or not? And those are two different semantic things. So it might be a good idea to punt for this one until that gets clarified.
I was going to add that we should be having a conversation over on the DIDCOM V2 question as well, right? So, yep.
Okay. Revocation notification. Objections? This is a big one for us because we believe revocation is going to be crucial in I think every use case because if for no other reason than, you know, somebody coming back with a different, you know, requesting the same credential a second time for whatever reason, you only want them to have the one, then you should revoke the one that you issued previously. They could have lost their wallet, deleted their wallet, and now they're coming back for another one. And to be safe, you want to revoke the existing one they gave you. So I think it's a good idea. Actually, as I think about that use case, it's less important, but just to notify you that that the issuer has decided, for whatever reason it has, to revoke your credential.
I think it's very useful. I'd just like to make just a small note. In the verifiable credential data model, the ID property is not mandatory. I'm not sure why exactly that is, but just want to point that out, just to see if anyone else wants to chime in on, you know, why this is, and maybe any potential conflicts they might see between that specification and this protocol.
So,
actually, go ahead. I think I get it. Go ahead, Daniel.
So the reason that it's not mandatory is because of ZKPs. The notion that you have a credential that you deal with over and over again isn't the way ZKPs work. Instead, you derive a credential every time you present it. And so having an ID in the derived credential that is guaranteed to always be meaningless seemed like a dumb idea. Similarly, ID on a credential subject is also optional for the same reason.
Okay, so then what do you make of this protocol, revocation notification, which it references the revoked credential with an identifier?
So even though that's optional, it doesn't mean that the RFC is not useful, and it's useful even in ZKP situations. It just means that the identifier that is in a derived credential isn't the identifier that the issuer would be talking about in the ZKP case. Where you don't have ZKPs, the identifier in a derived, or the identifier that you present and the identifier that was issued to you are the same. Okay. In the ZKP case, they're different.
Okay, I understand. Thank you.
Another way to put it is even in the ZKP situation, the issuer and the holder both know what they're talking about. It's the none of the verifiers do, but the issuer and the holder do.
Although
to the holder.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Although I got a little bit confused because I heard just now, these derived ZKP credentials are actually presentations. Would that be a fair assessment?
Well, a presentation contains a credential,
yeah,
or multiple credentials, right? So there's a presentation, and inside of it, there's a verifiable credential,
yeah.
And the verifiable credential inside that presentation doesn't necessarily have an ID. It might, but if it does have an ID, again, we're still in the ZKP case, it's guaranteed to be useless. You can never refer to it again. You couldn't use it to go back and check revocation status with it or anything like that. All you could do is say, yeah, I saw credential 12345 and I'll never see it again.
So I understand that. We would likely be doing similar things when we implement BBS Plus in Aries Framework Go, selective disclosure with the presentation exchange in Aries Framework Go. I don't know. It's kind of a bit weird in my head, but I think I get the point. Thank you.
Bottom line is that the revocation notification protocol is quite useful, I think.
I think so too.
Yeah. It's because the issuer can do it unilaterally, and it's nice if they have a way they can optionally tell the holder, by the way, we just revoked your credential.
I wonder if some naming would clarify that this is holder notification of revocation, not verifier revocation of notification.
Well, it does say pretty clearly, like, the revoke message sent by the issuer to the holder is as follows.
No, it says inside. I'm just, you know, it's the TLDR problem where you see the title and you're like, oh, perfect. That can notify the verifier that it's been revoked, which is not at all its purpose, right?
Oh, yeah. I would be open to that that addition.
Sam's adding that. Right?
Am I allowed to change the name of an RFC for clarification? I can always propose it and people can tell me no. I guess that's the operation, right?
Proposed as well. So I wouldn't mind, Sam, if you did a read of it and see if there's anything else, because we didn't spend a lot of time on this one when it came up. I just think it's a good idea.
I will read and propose a rename.
Excellent.
Do we require that the DID that's being used on the DIDCOM channel for this message to be sent be the same as the DID of the issuer? Or do we just assume that whoever receives this message will be able to figure out whether it's really the issuer they thought it was?
I'm confused.
Yeah, so that is a question basically saying via which transport will this or channel will this message be transmitted, right? It's either DIDCOM or something else.
I think well, that's an interesting wrinkle I hadn't even thought about, George. But what I was thinking is, you know, let's say Amazon.com is the entity that issued the credential, and the credential is that you're an Amazon Prime customer, okay? So Amazon.com has a public issuer DID, okay? And they've gone out to the world and they've said, hey, we're Amazon and we're going to issue DIDs with this public DID. But when they set up the DIDCOM channel, they might have created a pairwise relationship with you and have a pairwise DID, right? Mm-hmm. So can they use their pairwise DID to send you a notification that the credential issued on a different DID is now being revoked? Or do they have to send you the message as Amazon the issuer? That's the question I was asking.
Well, a related question, is there a reasonable architecture for them to actually, do you have to connect to the actual issuer DID, or can I connect with them, end up with a pairwise connection and still get issued a credential from the DID? Because if the issuance question is true, meaning I get issued a credential from the DID over my pairwise connection, I don't see why I can't receive revocation over the pairwise connection, even though it was a credential from the DID.
Absolutely. Good point.
And not only that, but you can always check to see if it's been notified, if it's been revoked.
Well, and it strikes me that while it's ought to index, you know, for this purpose at least, the wallets ought to be able to use the issuer DID and the ID to find a credential. Meaning it's whether it's indexed or it's capable of being looked up in that way. That seems like the right answer. It doesn't matter which connection you get, the pairwise ID of the connection you got it on. It matters, you know, who the DID was that actually issued the thing in the first place.
Yep.
But then you'll have to index all three. Right, the credential ID, the DID, the pairwise DID, as well as the DID that it came from.
Not necessarily. After you look it up, you'll get it back and you'll see all the other information.
Yeah.
Yeah, but based on this revocation, there's you'll have. Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, because you won't have the DID that it came from, but it'll come over your pairwise DID connection. So yeah.
Right.
To give an example, Lissy right now is putting a notice. I think it's their eSatis now is putting a notice when a credential's been revoked. But the only way they know that is they do a query to the ledger and check to see if it's been revoked. This is just a kindness from the issuer to say, hey, by the way, I just revoked your thing. You actually might want to verify the message by using that as a trigger to go look to see if it's been revoked. Assume they're lying and check it.
I will spend some time on that RFC.
That'd be great. basic message, I think we said probably not, but I can't remember. But I'm going to write it down this time.
So there's a useful function here in providing a fixed target if you're going to do basic message. Now, basic message hasn't moved in forever. But I think there is a thing that says, if you want to do basic message, here's the one that you would do. So it depends a little bit on the how the AIP applies to real life and how it's to be interpreted, whether you have to do all of these things or if you're going to do them, this is the target you should shoot for. Here's another thought, and this is both for and against including it. I think that the process of communicating with a human using words and language and stuff, in addition to all of the rich, semantically rich protocols that we have, is going to be become increasingly important. I don't know that that automatically means we should include basic message as itself. Maybe Daniel designs a thing that's so awesome that we all swoon in its presence, and then we include that in the next IP, and that, I'm fine with that too. But the general concept, I think, of human communication is going to be become more important over time.
And that's the exact reason why I think it should be included, is because at least now we can send a message from a machine to a human and say something. But it's the mobile agents that have to display it and figure out how to display it and what to display. But that to me is exactly why I want to do that.
Well, and it seems like it's a good first step in the right direction to a richer chat functionality. If you at least have the capability of sending plain text, then moving forward to something more advanced, I think would be an easier transition.
Yeah. I'm just realizing that, you know what? I don't even know if localization is supported, because as soon as I said that, I went, wait, localization.
I believe it is.
Yeah, it is. Good.
So I think I addressed this. The only localization that I actually say is you present what locale it is. There is not a discussion of alternative translations, which is one
right,
of
the right, but it leaves it open to be able to do that, right?
It does. So the other thing that go ahead, Daniel. Sorry.
I just want to understand what's the, Stephen, you just said it's mobile agents that have to display this. What would be our expectation on a non-mobile agent, or maybe more explicitly on an agent that isn't displaying a UI to a person? Because you could have an enterprise agent that is manned by a support tech or something like that. But what's the expectation? Does somebody just say, well, our agent doesn't need this, so therefore it doesn't apply to us, even though it's in the AIP? Or how do we give the people an out?
And the question is a little bit more nuanced when you consider frameworks, an example is Aries Framework Go. I'm not sure how I can cut Aries Framework Go one way or the other with regards to whether it should support this or not.
That's easy.
Yeah.
Right.
Controller.
Yeah. Like if you can receive the message and people can optionally say, hey, I have a handler for inbound messages, then you're done. And if people don't give you a handler for inbound basic message, then you just drop in the bit bucket.
Yeah. But basically the question is, does Aries Framework Go support this or doesn't it? it does not today. We don't have a use case. Sorry.
We submitted this quite a while ago.
Oh.
No, it's in there. This is like the first thing we ever submitted.
The use case is your controller may want to do something with it, and your controller may want to send these. The framework is agnostic as to whether anyone actually uses it or not. It's just a question of whether it, in this case, for basic message, it's literally a question of, do you want to hand it to the controller to do something with? Well, you hand it to the controller, and if it does something great, and you take it from the controller and you pass it on.
Yeah. Sorry, Philip, my bad. The reason why I always get confused with this one particularly is because it was implemented with a different layout structure within the framework. So I always get confused on this one in particular. Thanks for correcting me.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so in an enterprise agent with Canis, we have a perfect use case for this. We have agents spun up for high schools, and they make connections with students. The student sends something back. The framework gives it to Canis, and we do a web callback into our enterprise app that then displays the turns it into an internal message for the high school.
Okay, then. Cool. Awesome.
It's in.
I mean, that, yeah, it's already in Framework Go. So
if not handling inbound messages, which there's a lot of use cases for, outbound messages are fairly nice. If you know if there's a new connection, you can fire off a message from the agent to the user, to the human, saying, hey, welcome to the whatever, even if you're not going to respond to any inbound message. There's a handful of use cases there that are pretty easy to
okay. do. That took more time than I thought to get just these two. And we're out of time now, which is really surprised me. I thought we'd be.
Can I ask one quick question before we leave that?
Yep.
On that basic message 95, the content field, is there a size limit on the English, you know, natural language element that you can put there in the content?
Probably not.
There's not.
Should there be? Because that could be problematic.
I don't. We don't really put size limits on anything else, like the size of attachments or anything else.
What would you base it on?
Well, if I wanted to take your device down, and I put a gigabyte of information in there, or 10. And then your device is struggling to figure out how to receive all that message,
but you're still
error out of it,
because you're not going to know until after you receive the message that it's too large.
Yeah, exactly. So I would put this at the transport level, I think.
Yeah,
makes sense. So that might be a problem, but it's not a problem specifically to this protocol. Yeah.
Fair enough. Where would I comment about something like that?
You want to open up an issue on the DIDCOM V2? because what we could basically say is that, hey, your agent in the guide, we could say your agent should decide what is too big. And if it starts receiving a message and it realizes, whoa, I don't really know what this is, but it's too big, then you should handle that, right? That's sort of a guide for developing a DIDCOM message receiving piece of software, is that, hey, if you get something bigger and you want to deal with it, just chuck it.
And
it kind of goes like at the beginning. If you receive an inbound message, do you just receive until all the bytes are collected, or does it maybe tell you this message is 100 bytes, 1,000 bytes, 10K, whatever it is?
It doesn't say right now.
So this gets to an interesting subtlety. The name of the repo where DIDCOM V2 is being developed, the repo name is DIDCOM Messaging. And the reason that it's named that is because Tobias made a case that we might at some point want to create something that's DIDCOM-like, but it deals with streaming instead. Or maybe there's some other options beside messaging and streaming, maybe broadcasting, for example. And so that particular issue, we have to decide how to solve it in DIDCOM messaging, and it may have a different solution if we have a streaming protocol.
Totally. And bring that issue up might ask us, like, hey, do we actually want to say, hey, we're approximately this size or whatever, as a warning. But right now, there's no accommodation for that at all. So basically, if the receiving agent gets to decide at what point it's going to give up and say no, and then that's how it works. We haven't really run into that problem.
Fair enough. So if I'd raise that as an issue, you'd want that down over in the DIDCOM.
Yeah, so in the Decentralized Identity Foundation and the DIDCOM messaging repo is the right place to stick that.
Yep.
Okay. I'll raise that question there and start that discussion. But I think we're kind of in an era of lots of cyber attacks. And so the question of what to do when you just get an endlessly large message You know what I'm saying? Do you just kind of fail out at some point, or I don't know?
It gets really interesting because we keep getting messages on Akapai saying, hey, or at least on Indie as well, and hey, can we put a picture in a credential and all that? And it's really about size versus can you do it? You absolutely can do it. It's a question of how big that picture is and how big the message is you're carrying and so on. So it's an interesting question and it goes across everything.
Yep, I definitely think we need to address that in the DidCon V2 guide. I don't know the spec needs to say anything about it exactly right now, but I think that addressing it in the guide for good, you know, building practices is valuable. At this point, my preference is that if it's not an urgent issue we have to solve right now, let's throw it at the DidCon V2 working group and sort out over there for the next round.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a great answer. If that'll cut across everything, then it'll solve the problem here and a bunch of other places too. And that way, you know, if you know what to expect, then you can decide whether you want to receive it. So.
Right. Well, and I'm very much hoping that the AIP after this one becomes the one where we say, hey, we're going to do DidCon V2. And this is how. And so I don't think it's going to be forever.
Okay. Really quickly on this. Mediator coordination, this should be called. Is 211 and 212 supposed to be there? Sam, you said one of them shouldn't be.
I don't like 212. Yes, I wrote it. I still don't like it.
So should we remove it?
I actually want to burn it with fire, but I definitely don't want to include it in the AIP.
Okay. Is it, and that's okay. Like, I don't know anything about it, so...
Well, it started out as a semantically rich way to do something you could already do anyway with something like a trust ping with no response. The issue is that while I was not paying enough attention, a PR got accepted that added a alternative method of managing messages that is incomplete. And so now it's kind of a hot mess for two reasons. I think it's doing the wrong thing and it's doing the wrong thing incompletely. So, I would argue for it not being included.
Okay. Trust ping is not part of this, so that doesn't solve it. Can you make sure that we solve it? Can you take that as an action to look at making sure that that if we just include 211 and 94, that we've got enough in there? That's all I'm worried about.
I will check. Why isn't trust ping in there?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let me ask another question while you're thinking about that. Should we update the status of any RFCs that we say are part of the AIP to make them accepted instead of just proposed?
Yeah, that'll be the next round of things we do. Yep. Okay, we're over time. George, I really hope you can lead a discussion on these ones next time.
Did key was the one I took away. What yeah. else do you? Oh, and we've already raised the PR to add a simple key type to 334.
I'm sure everyone's in sync with these ones, and I'm not good at these two, this area. So I'm wondering if you could just lead the discussion. Even I'll just show this screen, but if you could plan on introducing the topic the next time.
I don't know what 0044, like what's the topic over there?
It's fine. This is just the MIME type ones that and the PR from Daniel that was accepted. So I think this one's a good to go.
Okay, I remember that one.
Yeah. And I think I don't think there's any controversy on this one. It's a good to go, but it's these two that the second two. I just want people to understand them as opposed to I'm not against them. I'm not good at understanding them well enough to present.
Okay.
So this is the point where we're going to discuss the next time. Probably we're through with this one. And then we've got these ones to discuss next time. And trust ping never got included in AIP 1. And I'm wondering if it should be. So I just added it as the maybes. So that's our next discussion, I think.
Awesome.
Which is happening in on the 6th January. Of January.
Yep.
Yeah, I will probably, I will not be attending that call.
Oh, okay.
I'll be attending the one following that one.
All right, I'll give it a shot.
I'll try to have the mediator coordination stuff ready, Stephen. We could always start there.
Yeah, and I'll have this one as well based on the conversations that George generates, and we'll go from there.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Stephen, for leading this discussion. I feel like these are messy, but there's lots of good conversation that needs to happen here for us to come together on this. So I appreciate your efforts. Thank you, everyone, for a year of awesome. May your holidays be wonderful and safe and happy. And we will see you all next year.
All right. Happy holidays,
everyone. Hey, folks.
Thank you, guys.